This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 670. My name, as it usually is Lisa Sheps, and alongside of me, co-hosting as usual, is my co-host with the mo-host, is Nicole Shiro.
Hello, Lisa.
Hello. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, streaming live at HBO, KOOP.org. Stick with us. It's going to be crazy.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Seasons of love.
It is Wednesday, May 25th, 2022. This is the last show of our 14th season. Next week, we will be here on our 15th season. On the show today, we have our friends at Salvage Vanguard Theater and their show, Bright Mother. And then we will, of course, have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Bangladesh, and Portsmouth. Stick with us.
It's time now to sing out, although it's not the end.
All right, I don't know what I meant by Portsmouth.
Well, I was like Rhode Island, New Hampshire. There's a few Portsmouth. Where were you going?
It's all of them. I'm doing all of them.
All of them, okay.
Yeah, why not?
Portsmouth, Rhode Island used to have a fabulous place that had some of the most excellent ice cream, but they recently closed it. It's sad.
Well, I just need to start out by acknowledging that song, which I did because of our new season, but it was Seasons of Love. But it was decidedly a kind of a sad version. It's sung
by
Jonathan Larson himself. Mm-hmm. And I just need to take a moment. And I should say, because I don't know what I'm going to say, that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not those of the board of directors, the staff, or anybody here at Co-op. It's simply my own opinion. But this is a sad day right now.
It is.
I'm overwhelmed with emotion all day long around the killings in Uvalde. And I'm angry. And I know this doesn't have to do with theater, but it's the theater of the world. And in my opinion, with all these mass shootings, it's theater of the absurd, for God's sakes. And I'm just going to say this, probably an unpopular opinion, especially in this state, but I think we need to start talking about repealing the Second Amendment. Make gun ownership a privilege, not a right. That's all I want to say. I have no problem with gun ownership, but I think you should deserve it, not just be given to you. That's my own opinion. But I just want to take a moment and pay heed to these 19 children and two teachers, and police officers that were injured in trying to stop this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sad and I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah. It's a heavy feeling in the air overall in the world. It's been heavy. It just got heavier.
Yeah. So I don't want to mull on this. Our show is not about this. Our show is about the wonderful world of theater. But
it's hard not to acknowledge what's happening in the world, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this week with that, and this young man was from the community. And then last week, the terrible killings of black people that was done by design just to kill black people. Something needs to change, and we say this every single time, and that's why I say I'm ready to make some wholesale changes in this country. With that, let's let's jump into more pleasant things. Let me introduce the people that are here with us, that you've been hearing some disembodied voices. We have Kate Taylor. Hi, Kate. Get right up on that microphone.
Good to be here.
We have Rachel Long.
Thank you so much for having us.
And then I'm going to play this game. Alan, who we've never met, but have we met?
Briefly. I was at the premiere of Dot a few weeks ago.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you pronounce your own last name because I'm not going to even try.
It's Alan Portery.
Portery.
Yes.
Well, that's exactly as it's spelled.
All right.
Okay. Well, I could have got that. Seasons of Love. We are. We have been doing the show for 14 years. We're about to jump into 15. So Nicole,
I can't believe
we're gonna have to do some kind of celebration.
I was like,
for
what
15
are we gonna
years.
Do for the magical 15?
So a year
years.
From now, we're gonna have to have a pate in here. Shiro, we're going to break all the rules. We're going to bring in cake.
Shiro.
Yep.
So what's going to happen?
It's pretty amazing.
It's mystical and magical.
So, Kate, you've been on the show before.
I actually haven't. We've had other shows featured. I usually get out of the way and just say, hey,
oh my God.
Talk to these other people.
That's amazing.
Like,
well, have either of you been
here
on the
well,
show before?
Yeah. I haven't.
I've not either.
Okay.
Well, oh, this makes it kind of exciting.
Nicole and I have been on the show before.
Yes, Lisa and I have been on the show before. So, we have done this before.
We have. We're
just once.
Well, except you would never know it because now my computer has gone to sleep and...
Sleep No More.
It's hard. I want to see Sleep No More.
I know
has
you
anybody
do.
Here
That's
seen Sleep
why
No More?
I, yeah.
Rachel, you've seen
I've
it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Did you see it, I'm assuming, pre-pandemic?
Yes, pre-pandemic in New York.
And it well, was, that, it was where else good. Could you see it?
Yeah, I don't know. London,
nowhere,
I
I'll tell you that. Yeah. yeah, every time I've gone to New York, I go to bed early, and it's like, and everybody says you got to get there, you got to do the full 3 hours.
Yeah.
You got to go to the late show, and oy.
When you do a double feature, you book a show earlier and then you go and do that show. You just have to time those right.
Yeah, it wasn't about timing for me. It was about sleep. Sleep no
but
more.
But you shall sleep no more and do double show.
I shall sleep no more. So last week we talked about the $76 standing room tickets for the Music Man. And how I felt that we spent some time talking about how snobbish I am that I don't stand up for shows. But $76 is a lot of money to pay to stand up and for 3 hours and watch a show. And sure enough, the next day, the Onstage blog came out and basically reiterated everything I said.
But they said it in a totally different way. Like, I think I forwarded to you and I was like, I spit out my coffee reading this. And you were like, oh, I already have it in the show. I did too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But he ends his blog by saying, and I should say, the guy that writes this is a guy named Christopher Peterson. And I sometimes like his blog posts and sometimes I go, that's stupid.
Well, you know what? That's different strokes for different folks. That's what makes the world go round.
So one of the things
that's
he says
great.
in the blog is, it's these types of shenanigans that make me think that Scott Rudin isn't fully departed from the show as he would like to be. In the end, and this is the part that saddens me, in the end, it won't matter because people will pay the money for the seats.
Mm-hmm. There'll be a link to this, won't this?
There will be.
We can't say all the stuff he said on air.
No, we can't.
Which is why we can't talk more about it, but it made me giggle.
it did make me giggle. And then apropos to that, there was a thing... Manny Eisenberg, a longtime producer, who I've met. Yes.
Applause.
But they had a very interesting, in the NewYorkTheater.me site, it's an article called Broadway Producer Emmanuel Eisenberg, We've Chased Away Our Audience. And he just talks about the way it was back then and the way it is now. But it's interesting. There were some interesting statistics that I want to share with my audience. So here's one. 100 years ago on Broadway, there were 270 openings each year.
Isn't that crazy?
And there were 90 theaters. Mm-hmm. Now we have 35 shows a year and 35 theaters.
It just mind-boggled me. I was like, I mean, I knew it was going to be more. I absolutely knew that. But just to see the vast difference was like, I don't know if that's exactly what I'm trying to say, but you know what I'm trying to say.
And so this is something we've talked about on the show before, but he put it in print. And I've often talked about, so when I lived in New York, Broadway was relatively inexpensive. As a matter of fact, when Liza Minnelli's The Act opened, there was a onslaught of protests in the theater community because she was charging $20 to go see a show. So Manny Eisenberg says, when Chorus Line opened, the top ticket price was $15. And now it's $250 to $500. And that's that's before you get into the Hamilton-infused, what do they call it? Supreme pricing, luxury, the extra pricing. $1,500.
Your golden circle VIP.
Exactly. And then I like this. The theater owners hate the unions. The unions hate the producers, and the producers hate the theater owner. None of them get their way, and they all take it out on the customer.
Uh-huh. I laughed at that. I was like, oh, we should do a musical about that. Oh, wait, isn't there?
Yeah, but what it says is that, well, and this is no surprise, but I mean, once upon a time, Broadway was accessible.
Yes.
And even in my era, it was accessible, even though I will tell you $20 in 1981 was a lot of money. It felt like a lot of money to pay. But I'm no mathematician, but I think the percentage is far outweighed inflation or consumer price index, what it's gone now. So it just makes that much less accessible. I will also say that when I was in New York, so you had Broadway, which was sort of accessible. You had Off-Broadway, which was very accessible. And then you had Off-Off-Broadway, which was, let's go see our friends put on a show.
Uh-huh.
And now it's Broadway inaccessible, Off-Broadway kind of
depends
inaccessible.
Depends on the show,
and
yeah.
Off-Off-Broadway is the new Off-Broadway, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah. It's all good talent.
So I'd like to tell our listeners that our guests are nodding, which works really well on radio.
Which is interesting, because I feel like we also have seen a lot more. We've not just seen a lot more, but we've heard a lot more now because of that different dynamic of the Off-Off-Broadway moving to the Off-Broadway, moving to the Broadway. Like, we hear more of that story, and I'd like to know what the percentage is of how often that really happens versus now and then. Get on that little story for me with those statistics.
And what do they call the current Off-Off-Broadway?
Like, I don't know.
Like, my very first show in New York was a production of the that was my second show, but it was out in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn.
I think it's just theater.
And we called that Off-Off-Broadway. But I don't think people would call that Off-Off-Broadway.
I don't
now.
Know.
Anyway.
You know so, what? Thanks. We'll have to look into that with our hard-hitting news. We'll capture and tackle this during our 15th season, Lisa.
My first show, by the way, was a show called The Seesaw Sea, and it was performed in a bar down near the World Trade Center. It's crazy.
Oh.
And it, guess where it took place?
Where?
Anybody?
Which bar, you mean?
No, guess what the setting of the play of the was. World?
In a bar?
Yes.
How about that?
Amazing.
Well, that just worked out well for you, didn't it?
So the last quote I want to do for Manny Azenberg is, we're talking about, you know, we have the George Floyd reckoning. We have a lot of reckoning. We talk about theater, really looking at the We See You White Theater list of demands and really trying to make changes in making our theaters a little bit more diverse. Manny Azenberg says, if you really want to change diversity, then once a month, Broadway should provide every show for nothing and offer tickets to every high school in the metropolitan area for the next 15 years.
Mm-hmm. It's a great idea.
Isn't that a great idea?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's talk to somebody.
I agree. It's very hard. My uncle was a biology teacher in New York, and he saw what theater could do. And he served a lot of underserved communities, and he raised money personally every year to be able to take his students to go see Broadway twice a year because he knew it changed him. He still talks to these students and has been retired 20, 30 years later, and how it changed their life and how it moved forward. But I was like, that's ridiculous. And he said there's other teachers there that have carried on that same tradition, and he still helps. But this is a biology teacher.
Yeah.
Not an arts teacher who knew the importance of theater being accessible for everyone. Thank you, Big Bob. I love Uncle Bob.
Big Bob, BB.
Uncle Bob is...
Uncle Bob, yeah.
Good guy.
You couldn't see that, but just...
I touched
Nicole
my
pounded
heart.
Her,
and just,
you pounded your
one
heart.
One of those special people in life.
So we haven't really talked about the show very often, but I keep forgetting what it's about. But Kimberly Akimbo has won every single Off-Broadway award there is to get, and it's kicking some hiney. And it's a musical with book and lyrics by David Lindsay Hebert, with music by one Janine Tesori.
I know, right?
Yeah. And it is moving to Broadway. It's moving to one of my favorite theaters.
Which theater?
The Booth.
Oh, you do.
Which doesn't usually have musicals.
No, it doesn't.
Because it's tiny.
I feel like I have seen a musical in the Booth before.
At the Booth?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wonder what it is. It'll come to me.
Yeah, Booth is a beautiful theater.
Booth is a beautiful theater.
Raise your hand if you've been to the Booth. Okay, well, there are two of us, but even still, radio listeners, we could have told them it was
all of us. Oh, yeah, I did. I did my own no-no and raised my own hand.
Yeah. So the complete cast is Justin Cooley, Steve Boyer, Ali Mousey, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, Bonnie Milligan, Olivia Elise Hardy, Fennell Hogan, Michael Iskander, and Nina White. Four of them are making their Broadway debuts.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I love when I hear that. I love when I hear things like, I think it might have been This Is Come From Away, where like everybody got their equity card on that show.
I think
and their Broadway debut.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
It's what we like to call spectacular.
It's a spectacular. Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. Oh, Lorraine Hansberry statue. Did you read about that?
I don't know if I read about that.
So
no.
Lorraine Stansberry, playwright from the 50s, I think, maybe.
I think
she wrote Raisin, amongst other things. Mm-hmm. There's Lynn Nottage had made a request, and there is a statue that's going to be unveiled in Times Square temporarily. It's going to move around the country. Austin is not one of the places it's going. And Lynn Nottage started an initiative with Julia Jordan about recognizing women in theater. And the statue is a life-size likeness of Hansberry, surrounded by five movable bronze chairs that represent aspects of her life.
Okay, that's spectacular.
It's spectacular.
And that's a bummer. Is it going anywhere in Texas?
It didn't. I need to look and see whether there's. They just listed a few cities. Chicago is the next stop. It's going to be in New York till June 12th. Oh, no. Its permanent home is in Chicago, which is where she's from. I don't know. But tied to this, and look at this picture. Mm.
Gorgeous.
Oh, that is a great
for those of you, there's a link to this and you can see it, but it's got Elaine Hansberry sitting on her. It looks like a crazy old electric typewriter.
It's like it's a typewriter, yeah.
Yeah, but it looks like it's steampunk typewriter, kind of. I can't recognize that one. But this is also tied to the second prong of this thing, which is a scholarship that offers living expenses for two female or non-binary graduate student writers of color who create for the stage, television, or film.
I saw the scholarship. I don't know how I missed the statue part.
Yeah, well,
this is still spectacular.
Cool.
Yeah.
We should do that here.
You think? For real.
I love the concept of the rotating chairs, too. Is it interactive?
I believe folks can sit in them.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And let's see what else is on our list of things to talk about here today. Of course, the Broadway League extended the mask policy through June now.
Yes.
And New York is, Austin is lucky that we have not been hit yet by this
surge. Right.
And hopefully I'm crossing my fingers that we won't, but New York is being hit.
I will jazz hand to that.
Yeah, New York's being hit pretty. What's so funny?
Bright Mother was hit earlier in the rehearsal process.
I got COVID earlier in the rehearsal process. Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But it wasn't a bad case.
How are you feeling now? Do you still have it?
No.
It's good.
It's been quite a few weeks.
I was just about to say, you didn't know that was the surprise for you, Lisa.
It's good.
I wouldn't do that to you, I promise.
So Time Magazine revealed its list of 100 most influential people of 2022. And there are five Broadway or theater people. Ariana DeBose. My hero.
Yes.
Michael R. Jackson, also my hero. Andrew Garfield, Sarah Jessica Parker, and Elizabeth Alexander, who I have to say that I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't know if I know Elizabeth Alexander. Maybe I don't know her. See, I'm trying to get better. Sometimes I get so obsessed with people. I did it as a child where you learn the character's name and you keep calling them that forever. And yet you're in love with their work and see everything they do. And I'm like, learn the person's name. Learn the person's name. So that's been my new thing. But then old age keeps it harder to retain. Yeah. It's like a never ending
struggle. Thing as well.
But I try.
I would encourage folks to go to offstageonair.com and click on this because you see pictures and little stories about everything.
Oh, that's cool.
And they know so much more than I. And I think our penultimate thing that we're going to talk about, there's a word. You don't get it.
Dun, dun, dun.
So you know how every year the New York Times does who should win, who will win the Tony, who should win the Tony?
Yes.
And usually it is, it has been in the past, more than one critic. So it's been...
it was back and forth.
It's the two, mm-hmm. Yeah, they do it as an interview. And so Ben Brantley is no longer with the Times, and Jesse Green is the main thing. But you would have thought he would have brought in Maya Phillips.
Someone.
Or one of the, and it's yep. just him, you know.
And they've expanded
an old white
the
cis
staff.
Man again.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know why they do that. But here are some of his things. For best play, Lehman Trilogy is going to win. And he thinks that Skeleton Crew should have been nominated, which I, from what I hear, I agree with.
I was
Dana
like,
H.
That was a lot of rumbling.
Dana H. was not nominated. That was supposed to be amazing. Passover, which I saw the video version of it, was pretty darn amazing. It got passed over. Best musical, Strange Loop, will win. He said A Girl from the North Country should win, which I
really?
Put a big question mark next to. That
yeah.
doesn't make any sense to
that's,
me.
That's strange.
That's a okay. strange loop.
It's a strange loop.
I'm going to put this out there into the universe. Ground Floor Theater wants to do a strange loop in 2025. So
well,
let's hope those rights are available.
Manifest
then.
That right now.
I am. I'm just going to put it out there. It. All you other theater makers in Austin, listen up. I have dibs.
Lisa Sheps is boxing you out.
Deal. Well, jazz hand to that, Lisa yep. Sheps.
Best musical revival is Company will win. He believes that Caroline or Change should win, but it didn't get very good notices. I mean, it didn't get terrible notices.
I was about to say, but there was some hit or miss with Company notices, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, they did not like Katrina Link at all.
Right. I love Caroline or Change.
Yeah.
So.
And he said should have been nominated is Into the Woods. And from what I hear, but I'm not... Kate just shrugged her shoulders, and I agree. I like Into the Woods. I'm not a huge fan of Into the Woods, but from what I understand, this I believe
like,
is an encore.
It's because of this cast.
But it was supposed to be amazing.
Yeah, I was about to say when you keep putting the most talented people in a group of room that have magic that work together, because you could put all the talented people in a room, and if they don't have that magic together, it's great, but it's not that, as we like to say today, spectacular.
It's a spectacular
moment.
Spectacular.
But yeah, no, I've heard the same thing. I mean, I do love Into the Woods, but I've heard the same thing about this cast together,
yeah.
Which doesn't surprise
Who
me.
Who loves Into the Woods? Who's an Into the Woods fan?
I do.
Okay. So we're, other than Nicole, we're all sort of middle of the road.
But I'm not like overly obsessed with it. Like, have to, like.
I will say I've never seen a better Little Red than Nicole Shiro and Colleen's production of it back in 2000 and whatever.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
You're just that was the day that you forced you caused me to get a speeding ticket.
I think I got the speeding ticket right after you leaving, so it's okay.
The last thing that I want to talk about, there's a lot more as usual that we didn't get to, but I want to talk about the special Lifetime Achievement Tony that is going to Angela Lansbury.
I was like, how has it not happened before?
Well, you know, it's a weird thing. It's when you get that Lifetime Achievement Award, it's kind of, you're done. Here's your award. So kind of you don't want it because she's done so much. She has won 5 Tonys in the past. She's 96 years old. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of old. When I get to be 96, I'll probably say it isn't old. I won't make it
Well,
to
my
96.
Grandmother's turning 98. She reminds me it's old.
But she's been nominated for three Oscars. Mostly, notably for The Manchurian Candidate in 1962. And then, of course, she's known for doing MAME. She's done a lot of Sondheim, Sweeney Todd, Anyone Can Whistle, amongst others. Her latest Broadway appearance was in 2012. It's a revival of The Best Man by Gore Vidal. And then we're going to hear a little piece of music from a musical that she won a Tony for called Dear World. And Dear World is a very interesting musical. I had never heard of it. Has anybody heard of it?
No.
I have not.
It is a musical rendition of, hold on, I can't remember it all by myself, of The Mad Woman of Shiloh, I can't pronounce the word. It's a French city, and I could pronounce it, but I can't right now. But it's about a woman that, that saves this building from being torn down by an evil developer.
We could use more of that in Austin right now.
We really could. And this show had music and lyrics by Jerry Herman and book by Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee. It opened on Broadway in 1969. It had several revivals, not on Broadway, but around the world, most notably on the West End in 2013.
I was like, who was in the West End? I remember this being revived over in England.
It's got an interesting past, which we don't have time to go into, so we're not going to. But it had people have done it. People like Tyne Daly, Vicki Lewis, Stephen Weber have all been involved with this project.
Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice to the caterpillar.
All right, so we are going to take a little break, and we are going to listen to a little bit of Each Tomorrow Morning from Dear World, sung by one Angela Lansbury. Here it is.
If your world falls flat on its face,
we are BACK.
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 Which means back.
You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro, and you were listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and that's it. We have been talking about theater with our friends from Salvage Vanguard, Kate Taylor, Rachel Long, and Alan, I'm going to try it, Portuary. No, and it's at like...
You almost had it.
I was close.
Portuary.
Portuary.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to call it Portuary. Follow me to Portuary.
Is that even a place? It is in your mind.
What's the Tipperary? What is it to Tipperary? How are things in Portuary? That's what I meant to say.
Oh, you are on fire today.
So here we are. And, you know, y'all, thank you for joining us in our conversation. We went a little longer than we normally do. But so we're talking to you guys about your show, Bright Mother. And, of course, there's a subhead to it that I didn't write down. So give it to me. Bright Mother.
An invitation to being.
An invitation to being, which looks amazing. And you're doing it for 2 weeks, and you've already done it 1 week. And there are no tickets available for the final week, but we want to tell people about it. So, Kate, tell us about this show.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We're happy to be here with you. And we are working to add a little bit of capacity, so stay tuned. You can check the website for more details. We're going to try to share it with more folks.
What's the website?
Salvagevanguard.org.
Okay,
that's
great.
That's useful information.
Most excellent.
Yeah. And I'm going to hand it over to Rachel and Alan, who are immersed in this project. I also just wanted to give a quick shout out to Val Johnson, who could not make it. She's our weaver and our stage manager, weaver of joy and sanity for us all. And also Sade M. Jones, our co-director and movement director, could not be with us today.
We love Sade.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. And Rachel, this is Rachel's concept. And I just, before I hand it over to Rachel, want to say Rachel has long done a lot of thankless labor, quiet, unseen work for Salvage Vanguard. So it's especially exciting to get to share her work in a fuller way with everybody.
Wonderful. And Rachel, not only did you write this, but you and Sade are co-directing it.
True, yes.
Awesome. So tell us about it.
Sure. Well, I'll just say first, I could not be more delighted to be co-directing with Sade, who just brings so much to it. She's performing, and she's also done a lot of the movement direction for the piece. And like you were saying, Nicole, there's this sort of magic that happens with certain groups of people. And I feel like the group of people that have formed, including Kate and Alan, to work on this project has been absolutely beautiful to be part of.
I wish we could bottle those feelings and moments at times, because it's just so powerful. And absolutely. The audience feels it when you feel it, which is just even more mind-bending to me.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And so the piece is looking at, among other things, themes of perception and the limitations of perception, purpose. The hope has also been for it to be somewhere between a performance and a meditation. So the idea was to sort of carry the audience through an experience that's not as much about belief or ideas per se, but is also about a kind of embodied experience of a particular kind of presence or attention. And to that end, we have in the piece, an invitation for a touchstone of attention, which is introduced outside of the performance space by my friend Melinda Barsalis, who's tending a fire for the whole performance, which is inspired by a wilderness vigil process where somebody holds a fire space for the person who's going through the process. So the idea is to have Melinda holding that space for everyone who's performing and who's experiencing the performance.
So I have to ask the question. Cool. I'm familiar with the environs around the crash box.
Yeah.
And so how did you build a fire pit, or is it in one of those trash can things? How, because it's a warehousey type of space.
Yes.
Concrete around there. What are you, how are you doing the fire? That's, I'm intrigued.
Well, we've got to give a shout out to Brenna Taylor in Cleveland, Ohio, my
well,
sister. She gifted me a small fire pit that I brought in and we're using, and it is very attentively cared for and looked after. Just wanted to let everybody know. Being very safe.
Very, 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 very careful.
It's good. Yeah. The fire marshal is a listener of Offstage. Not really.
Yeah.
And then, and I'll just say there's also an incredible group of designers working on the project. I don't know if it's worth listing everybody, but...
We love to pay homage to folks that are doing things, so feel free.
Yeah. I'll jump in. Lisa LaRada has created a visual installation that just embraces you as soon as you step into the theater. Lisa did the scenic design.
She's in a pretty amazing scenic design. Uh-huh. We still talk about the design that she did in our theater. It was for
Plano.
Plano, yes.
Directed by Dustin Willis, who also directed Wolf Play, my favorite thing I saw in New York this year. Meant to plug that in earlier.
Oh, cool. I should have.
Yeah, but Lisa has a loom on stage that Val, I mentioned, is our weaver and is present throughout the piece. But the floorscape, the gorgeous installation above is just gorgeous. You want to talk about our
absolutely.
Sound team?
Yeah. So when I had the initial ideas for this project, I knew that I wanted to work with Nick Gregg, who is a local musician. He was part of... formed Mother Falcon years ago, and as a friend.
Love Mother Falcon.
Yeah.
And former board member.
Former board member of SVT, and we talked for some time about doing a project together. And he had the brilliant idea of bringing on Clara Brill, who also helped with music, and they have built an incredibly beautiful soundscape for the piece, and they're also playing strings live with the performance, along with these sort of drone-ish inspired... soundscapes that correspond with each scene, and they're thinking
By drone, I'm assuming you mean the musical drone versus the aircraft.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So like sounds of nature and sort of like sounds that fill the space with a kind of resonance. And they're thinking about putting the music that they've created into an album. So that's something to look out for.
Wonderful.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And Walt Long is our sound engineer, who has been a very big part of that collaboration as well.
Yes. My brother, and he's running sound, and he helped a little bit with the music as well.
Alan, can you tell me what your position is in the show?
I sure can. I am a performer. I am playing the roles of the cowherd and a sound healer. So this process for me really has been about centering that meditative space that Kate and Rachel have talked about, and that Rachel and Sade have really cultivated for all of us. And it has been a transformative experience for me. Personally, I am mainly an actor singer, and this process has opened me up and unlocked the dancer within me. And so that's been an incredible experience to be a part of. And I also believe that anyone that comes to see this show will leave changed just a bit. I was actually talking to our fire tender, Melinda, at last week's performance, and I was saying that I think that this space that we've created, it invites people to kind of do the thing that the church posits for us, mm-hmm. of going in and kind of having this spiritual hospital experience and leaving cured. And I think we create that space in a way that we notice after every performance, people seem to walk out in this kind of levitating mood, and no one really wants to get up and leave the theater at the end of the show. So it's incredibly beautiful, and I really encourage anyone to come see it.
That's very beautiful.
That's, yeah.
Can you tell me, is this show, is it a narrative, or is, tell us about what could I expect as an audience member?
So I am, as an artist, mostly a visual artist, a painter, but I've also worked in theater for a long time. So most of the show is, I consider it to be more image, sound, and movement based. But there's one scene that's more of a particular story, which is told by Ajua Neal brilliantly, along with a soundscape that Clara created. And that was partially inspired by a version of Einstein on the Beach that I saw in New York in, I think, 2013, Philip Glass and Robert Wilson's mm-hmm. show. It's almost 4 hours long, and almost the whole time there's not any sort of like traditional dialogue. There's more, you know, repetitive numbers and nonsensical sort of things. And almost at the very end of 4 hours, there's this one very simple story. And I was really struck by the power of that story in the context of not having had that. So this show is very different than Einstein on the Beach, but that was an inspiration for having a show that is kind of more painterly and more movement and image based, and then has like a very particular story as one part of it. And the scenes for the show transition based on the color that the chorus is wearing, and Aaron Flynn created amazing costumes.
Aaron's a wonderful
for this
costume
show.
Designer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also have puppets by C.B. Goodman yes. of Grackle Jack and Sadie of Natalie George
it's like
Productions.
Everything I love.
Did the lights.
Right, yeah. when I looked at the design list and the whole list, I go, oh, this is a who's
Delish.
Who. And what's great about what
Delish.
You put together?
That's a good way. Yes,
it is. And I'm gonna give you a little. I'm gonna give you a little bit of praise as producer. Most when I look at the list of names, I don't necessarily automatically associate them with SVT, but I associate them with other theaters. And it's really great when we get these players that have worked in a lot of other theaters together. And it goes to what we've been trying to do for the past 2 years, which is start bringing our theater companies as a community together. And you've done it in
oh,
this
thank
piece.
You.
So
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for doing that. It's amazing. It sounds like so much fun that I think that you might want to consider extending.
I wish we could, but Line Upon Line is going to be in Crashbox next, so we do have...
Kick them out.
We are trying to add some space and a Saturday matinee. We will share the details of that probably tomorrow afternoon. But if I may, I just, you know, we've been on a wild ride the last couple of years.
Really?
And I think sometimes we forget that it's changed us and we're absorbing what that means. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm happy to provide a space and create with people in a slower way and in a way in which people can access it as they need to.
Well,
this sounds
wonderful.
Fulfilling too, which is also what is needed right now in life. So
yes.
That's great.
Well, the show sounds amazing. Can we switch gears if you can talk about SVT and future plans? What's going on?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think actually what I was talking about applies still. You know, I think as we move forward, being tasked with making work at a different pace and in a changed world is important. Sometimes we forget that and want to rush back to how we were doing it. Our space that we were hoping to build out pre-pandemic is still kind of in purgatory. It's a bit of an ellipsis, but we're embracing that. We're over at Roggy Ranch House, outside in a mostly raw space, but we've added a shipping container to kind of extend performance space. And we're working in partnership with New Manifest Theater in June. So they've got a show coming up in June. We'll do some parties, summer saunas over the summer just to get folks gathering and sharing space together. And then come fall, a long incubated project costed by Adrian Dawes is going to be happening in partnership with the Blanton, finally. And JKJK, Jenny Larson, and Kati Q are coming back to direct that.
Oh,
so
amazing.
Some old SVT legends
yeah,
in the mix.
Yeah. That's so exciting.
Well, it sounds amazing. Remind folks where they can go to get more information and see whether you add performances or not.
Yeah, salvagevanguard.org. And we are most active on our Instagram. Sorry, we're a little email, Facebook negligent. I apologize.
Okay, so what's your Instagram handle?
Salvage Vanguard.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that makes it easy. How about that branding there, huh?
Yes. You're going to kill me. I'm about to go through the names again. And Alan, I cannot get, tell it to me now. And then I'll
believe in you. Portery.
Portery. Okay. So Kate Taylor, Rachel Long, and Alan Portery with Salvage Vanguard and their show, Bright Mother at the Crash Box, which is currently through May 28th. More information.
29th.
Oh, through the Sunday.
Yes. 7:30 Sunday is our last show.
Snuck another one in there.
It could be interesting for someone that closes a show on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Anyway, more information at salvagevanguard.org.
Get your squash.
Cannot speak. You know, I had to go, you know, Bright Mother, Bright Star. So we run right to Edie Burkell and Steve Martin to go away with us.
Here
we'll be right
go.
Back.
Bright star,
bright day. Keep shining. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. We were just talking to Rachel Long, Kate Taylor, and Alan Portery. Look at that.
It's really not hard,
but my mind told me it was hard.
I don't know.
And
yeah,
I couldn't let go of that.
I thought you were going to sing earlier, but that just rolled off the tongue for
me. So listen to this. Look at all these shows that are in their last weekend. Bright Mother. Salvage Vanguard, we just talked about that. Mac and Mabel, Alchemy Theater, Dot over at Ground Floor Theater, A League of Her Own, Bottle Alley Theater, Midsummer Night's Dream, Austin Shakespeare, River City Pops, Dream On. And I should say, I just learned this not too long ago because I went and bought a ticket to that. And I was looking at the River City Pops homepage. I've never been to, has anybody been to see River City Pops?
Mm-mm.
No.
Not.
Well, they've been having an offshoot of theirs called Vibe, have been doing performances
at
Ground Floor Theater. So I decided I wanted to go see this one, and I'm looking at it, and guess who the artistic director is of River City Pops, and has been for a few years?
Tell me, Lisa.
Alan Roberts. Adam Roberts.
Wait a minute. I think we did know that about Adam. I think it came up once. Yeah. Well,
anyway.
Well, you should talk to him about that more.
No, I don't think I did. But yeah, it's possible.
I'm saying we should talk to him about that
more. We should.
We should.
The other things that I want to talk about, and unfortunately I need my computer to do this, is Undark, a radioactive puppet play by Trouble Puppet. Is happening, and I need to see the details on that.
Sponsored project of Salvage Vanguard Theater, and I think it's going to be over at the Vortex.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
It's an original historical play by Connor Hopkins. It tells the story of America's World War I radium girls. And it plays, it says May through June 2022, so I don't know what that means.
I think they're opening this weekend.
I was like, it means soon.
Yeah. Here it is. May 27th through June 11th at the Vortex.
Yep, that's this weekend.
And it is a sponsored project of Salvage Vanguard.
Yeah, and I saw a puppet incident piece. Emily, I think, the creator of the concept anyway, mm-hmm. worked on that one. It was really magical. So I'm curious to see where it's grown.
Where it's gone, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, I always love. I mean, I have to say, I admit that I'm not the biggest fan of puppetry, but when I go see Trouble Puppet stuff and Connor stuff, it's pretty amazing what they do.
Yep.
That's
I love the puppets.
And then coming up in a few weeks is the Mikado, Gilbert and Sullivan Austin, and they've opted not to do it in Yellowface. They are doing it in Tartanface. It's the Mikado, M-C-A-D-O. So it's set in Ireland. Scotland.
I think it's Scotland. You got to go.
Well, but here's, I've always
Braveheart there.
Thought that the M-C was Irish and the M-A-C was Scottish, but I've been told I'm wrong. But it runs June 10th through 19th. At the Worley Barton Theater at Brenton Christian School. I always like to go to Gilbert and Sullivan shows because I feel so young when I'm there.
Okay. Okay, you've never told me that. That is hilarious.
I love it. I am like the youngest person in the room.
I know you
love
going, but I didn't know that was the reason why. So that warmed my heart.
Youngest person in the room. I love it. This is a log rolling, which is a term I learned from the Slate's political gab fest. Whenever they talk about something that they're themselves doing, they call it log rolling. So I'm going to log roll a little bit.
Okay.
So I was involved. They were set to do this piece before the pandemic. So instead, they did these different takes, fresh takes on Gilbert and Sullivan, which Gilbert and Sullivan, let's just be clear, is fraught. If it's not racist, it's sexist.
It could be both at sometimes.
And both.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's just be very clear about how problematic Gilbert and Sullivan was. But to Gilbert and Sullivan Austin's credit, they reached out to a bunch of us. I don't know if any of you were involved in any of the ones saying, take this piece from the Gilbert and Sullivan canon and give us your take on it. I was given from the Mikado Titwillow song. Actually, there were three songs in it.
I was like, didn't you do more than one?
Yeah, there were three songs, and we did it. We made it a play within a play with two same-sex couples coming together to perform it, and we did it in both English and American Sign Language. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty good. And then I added, I'm a big Alan Sherman fan, and he did a parody of Titwillow. So I made a little Titwillow song myself. And they said, oh, that's wonderful. Nice, Lisa, but no. But then they, and then they did it. Then they allowed me to do it. So,
you can perform for us right now, right?
Yes. See me on tape on the Gilbert and Sullivan YouTube channel. It's there. I'm really proud of the work we did, and I'm really proud of a lot of the work that they, of the people they reached out to and the different ways they took on to it. There were a lot of themes of queerness, a lot of themes of racial diversity and ethnic diversity. I think they did a really good job.
There were puppets, weren't there, Lisa?
I believe there were puppets.
Sure one, yeah.
I believe there were puppets. And there was a wonderful one that Sarah Marie Curry did with some folks, and
Amber Quick. Yeah,
Amber Quick.
Sarah, I remember queer puppets. Yep. That's what I recall. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
here for the queerness and the puppets.
Well, and this is what you don't necessarily think of when you think of the Gilbert and Sullivan Society. And indeed, when you talk to the people, and Michael Meggs is deeply part of it. And I just I knew her via email, but I just met another person. And these are all people I like to talk that I'm of a certain age. But again, I feel young around Gilbert and Sullivan. These people are older than me. And kudos to them to go, you know what? Our idea of things can't be the end all and be all. Let's give this to some younger, more diverse people and see what they can do with it. So good for them.
Blow, I thought it was really cool.
Share.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Today in theater history.
Today in theater history.
That's our
stuff happened.
Bump, bump.
Lisa's going to tell us.
MAME, speaking of Angela Lansbury, opened in 1966. And I did not know this, in 1984, The Wiz opened.
Oh, I knew that because 84 was the good year. That was a good year for movies. It was a good year for musicals. That's Back to the Future, Top Gun years. I mean, the 84 was a good year.
How did you feel about 84?
I liked it. Didn't like it when I was limited, but I look back and I'm like, damn, 84 was a good year.
A Thousand Summers opened in 1932 at the very popular Selwyn Theater. Remember, we had 100 theaters.
Yep.
Yeah. And then what sort of interested me was at the Belasco Theater, a play in 1945 opened called Memphis Bound. And I'm just going to show everybody, they got a little picture of the playbill here. And it shows two black people, and it looks like they're in uniforms, in 1945. So I'm going a all-black musical in 1945. So I had to look a little bit about it, and of course, there's a Wikipedia page, which I will pull up for you as soon as I find it, Memphis Bound, and tell you a little bit about it. one of the stars is people that probably we will recognize, which is Bill Bojangles Robinson. And he looks so young in this picture, which is pretty amazing. So it didn't do really good, but it it ran, it was somewhere not on Broadway, and it opened at the Belasco Theater, and it ran for several months, and 30, not several months, I think 2 months for 36 performances. It got kind of panned at the box office, not at the box office, on the papers. I'm trying to figure out, I know that I read about what it is. It started in Boston at the Colonial Theater. And then opened on Broadway in May. And it was Gilbert and Sullivan. It's a take on Gilbert and Sullivan's, HMS Pinafore.
Interesting.
So, and it's also got a play within a play, but I find that very interesting.
So when I've been backstage at the Belasco, you know, they have that hit, as most theaters do, but this one has some really crazy history. There's a picture of Bojangles up. Now I understand why that was up there on the stairwell. I didn't realize. I knew some of, like, two or three. There was a few that I was like, there has to be a tie. I wish I knew what the tie was. Now I know the tie and connection.
There you go. And birthdays. Kristen Scott Thomas. Don't know who that is. Anybody? Okay, good. I don't feel alone. Alfred Molina. John C. Reilly.
Kristen Scott Thomas, like, all in the movies and stuff, too? Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'd know her if you saw her.
Leslie Rodriguez Kreitzer. Somebody named Patti LaBelle. Don't know who that is. and Alex Lacrimoire of Hamilton.
Oh, yeah.
And then also Ian McClellan.
That would be Sir.
Sir Ian McClellan.
Sir Ian.
And the one from... what was it? Leslie Uggams. Oh, never mind. It wasn't even Leslie Uggams. Forget it, so it doesn't matter. Eve Ensley, Anne Hesch, and Sydney Beers. And also at the Biltmore Theater in 2004, the show Sight Unseen opened.
Lisa, it's also Zach Crawford's birthday today.
Oh, I think I knew it.
Happy birthday.
Let's all give Zach local.
I think I need to sing him my song, don't you?
Sing it, Lisa.
This
do
is
it.
For you, Zach Crawford. This is your birthday song. It isn't very long. All right, we'll be right back.
Well done.
Okay, to keep our Gilbert and Sullivan, that is from the Hot Mikado, and that is why I played that. So yes, happy birthday to Zach Crawford.
That's pretty cool.
We've done it. We spent an hour together, so thank you. I want to thank Kate Taylor. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Rachel Long, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Alan Portery, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh,
Nicole Shiro, thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa Sheps, thank you.
No, you didn't thank let me you. Say that. Lisa, I'm going to send you an email. I'd like to talk about the Bob Fosse revival of dancing next week.
Okay, send me an email. That's okay. The way it works with Lisa Sheps. So that's our show. Thank you. Next week, we're hoping to have the folks from Penfold Theater and,
We do have them.
The War of the Worlds, the new reimagined War of the Worlds. And we may even get the amazing Mark Puhey.
We are getting
in the
Mark
in the studio
here.
And we're going to have to close everything up and send the police out.
He's not been able to make it. That is very exciting.
Yep. So
if the aliens don't attack first.
Well, and they may.
And they could. Who knows?
And they may. So that's it. Thank you, guys. We'll be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And my original thought for the season song was from Parade, but not the Robert Jason Brown Parade, a much more upbeat version of Parade starring, what's his name? He was always the center square, Charles Nelson Reilly. And it
I was like Brady Bunch or Hollywood. Didn't know which square you were going with.
And it is called the Jolly Theatrical Season. We'll see you next week, folks.
Au revoir.
Bless my soul. Good cat.
Oh, I forgot to tell you.